What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Today we have a joint episode with the lovely Butter Your Macros, Natalie and Heidi. How are you guys doing?
Dude, we're doing great. How are you?
I'm good. We were talking about a little like soccer, like withdrawal, but then I just chuckle. Like if you're a soccer fan, you know that if you're like my mom or like Jenna, then you know that soccer is always on. Like there's a big game on at 2 o'clock. Like, soccer never over. There's always something to watch. So I'm doing okay. Yeah.
No, I love it. It's what's so funny is like we're recording, but I feel like we've seen you a lot. So it's like weird to go into podcast mode now.
Oh, I know. Seriously. Because,
yeah. Let's just do like a shameless little plug. Like you guys, we're working on something really cool. If you enjoy our podcast, you're going to enjoy working with us and being with us in our new program coming up. So to be released within the next, some more details in the next couple of weeks.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. We don't need to do a big catch up. We've been catching up, which is fun because we don't have so much time today and we have a nice topic. So let's jump right into it. The title for today's episode will be some iteration of how to count macros and not F up your relationship with food. Some iteration with that.
Like, doesn't even need an iteration. I think that's a really good way to say it.
Yep.
Self-explanatory.
How to do it, you know, in a mentally healthy way, in a way that can get you physical goals, but also quality of life goals. And we were just like jotting down some quick things, just like how to do it. And I was going to like, part of me thinks like, this is the only way you should, like, I'm looking at all this stuff. I'm like, this is what you should be doing. Like, this is not just like a, hey, if you want to not F up your, like, you should be doing it that way. Like, that should be the goal. It's not like, no, I'm not worried about that. No, you should be worried about that. And if the things we go through today are like a lot of the things, like very generally, I would say you should be doing. And I, to kind of just finish that word vomit is like, when people talk about like, counting calories causes eating disorder or some breakdown of that sentence. Most of the time, if you ask somebody what their experience was with calorie counting or somebody who's had that negative experience, like what was your experience with calorie counting? They would describe something, at least to you and me, that we would not be coaching. And so it's like, I'm sorry for you that this was your foray into calorie counting, because this is not what I would have recommended for you. And this is not what I would want for anybody. And so what you are describing, yeah, I oftentimes when it's described to me, I like nod along and I'm like, I'm not super surprised that you ended up having a negative connotation of calorie counting, having it negatively affect your impact, your relationship with food. Like a lot of times I'm not surprised. And that's because it comes in a lot of shapes and sizes. Tracking is not just like a one size fits all. Should come with, you know, education and support and, you know, some of the stuff we're going to talk about today. But is that something that you guys have experienced where like you get some backlash about tracking and then you hear more about what that person was doing and you're like, yeah, you know, I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Or I would hate it too, if I approached it that way. Right. And mm-hmm. I think what's interesting is, you know, we talked about like a relationship with food. And I think I would argue that most people don't even know what theirs is. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we obviously know as coaches and as people and people who have pursued, you know, some kind of therapy level, it's like there are always layers to every single relationship, right? And your relationship with food is arguably no different than a relationship with a person. You have thoughts and beliefs and ideas around it. And if you're even a person who has use this is good, this is bad, or I'm going to be really good today, or I'm going to eat clean, or I'm not going to eat this, or this makes me fat, or I have no control over fill in the blanks. You already have this relationship with food that you might not even be aware of. And so it's interesting how tracking and dieting can actually bring out the worst of your relationships, right? Like it's a toxic relationship of its own, but in a lot of ways, people don't even see that they even like, we bring up like, oh, what's your relationship with food like? They're like, it's great. It's fine. It's like, what like you should know your relationship with food. So I would argue that that's like the first step into any of this pursuit, right? It's like, what is your relationship with food? DTR, determine totally. The relationship with food.
Totally. I mean, you probably heard people say like food is neutral. And while that is true, there's not very many people who actually feel neutral about it. And nor should that really be the goal, but rather when you understand that that's true, you can realize, okay, so that means everything that I think and believe about food, I'm projecting onto food. And so once you realize that, then we can start to get, then you can start to get curious about the different things about it that, you know, maybe are blocking you or obstacles or making you feel bad in some way or another. But definitely counting macros is not, nor should it be like trying to cure yourself of food.
Right. And it can. I mean, we counted macros and got a lot of awareness about our relationship mm-hmm. with food that way. But that's also, if are you objectively even open to wondering what it is, right? And I mean, that's the first point that you wanted to bring up is like working on it first before counting macros. And I would absolutely agree. I think even just getting curious about what it is, the relationship, like how do you feel about food? Do you find yourself like avoiding things or saying no to things or having a belief around it? I mean, you hear it all around you, hear it all the time. Like, oh, I'm going to be good today. No, thanks. Or I was really bad yesterday. I had pizza. Like even just the things you say like that will tell you exactly how you feel about it.
Yep.
I find that, so what we're talking about here is actually something I think we could be its own podcast. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, wow, this would have been a great by itself. It's just like, how do I even, like, how do I know what my relationship with food is? And that, I think that the first thing we are talking about today is kind of making sure that that's something that you are either working on before you even consider tracking calories or tracking whatever, or you're like doing some form of parallel where you're doing both at the same time, which we'll discuss like if and how that's possible. But I guess let's stay on this for a second. And if we tangent, we tangent. But like to me, that takes some level of introspection. You're like, hey, I need to assess the words I'm using, the feelings that I'm having around food, the feelings I'm having around my body, because I think they are intimately tied. A lot of times they're just very synergistic of like how I feel about my body. And that can kind of, I can then project that onto my thoughts of exercise and food because they just like are the inputs that I'm thinking, you know, affect the thing I care about most, whatever. And so the idea of like becoming more introspective, there's to me, there's like a little irony there. It's like, how do I become more introspective? And to me, it is introspective is like a singular thing of like within myself, but I've found it most helpful to bring in help with that. And so like for, whether it's, you know, a coach or therapy where it's like, I want to learn to be a bit more introspective, which is supposed to be about me, but having a guided structure to getting better at that, asking the right questions, learning the right paths to go down and be like, hey, why do I feel that way? Hey, why do I use that word? Hey, is like almost like you need a trained eye to come in and kind of just put a spotlight on some of that stuff and be curious about. If you've never like done some intense therapy, I don't myself, like I'm not intense therapy. I just mean having done it maybe consistently for a while. Like that's the only way I learned to cultivate those skills of being a little bit more introspective and being able to like think about my language a bit more and stuff like that. And I try and do that as a coach. So I just think generally having somebody there, would you guys say it's like, okay, listen, if you can learn to be more introspective, pay attention to your words, there's stuff you can do on your own. But I'm sure a lot of what you guys do is like just reflect back what you're hearing and then have people be like, ooh, yeah, maybe there's something there.
Right. Well, I mean, you talked about, you know, acknowledging that your relationship with food and your relationship with your body are intimately tied, and they completely are. It's how many people are like, oh, I was really good today, and they're in a good mood, they feel really good. Or the second that they go, you know, off track, off script, off whatever, they beat themselves up. And so like, that tells you more about it. It's like, do you really like only date bad boys? Or is there something about the bad boys you date that tells you something about yourself, right? Like, you know, it's like, have you ever asked yourself like, you know, why do I have so many failed relationships? Like I always date the same kind of bad guys. Like, well, what is it about the bad guy that you like, right? What are you attracted to? What is it about this? And like the same thing goes for like your diets and the foods you eat. You know, if you think that clean eating, I mean, I love Robin for my work so much, but she has done every single diet under the sun. Like, and I watch it all the time. And it's been really fascinating because the way she talks about herself when she's doing paleo or whole 30 or today, can we get Uber Eats? But I'm not trying to be good or anything like that today. I just want to get, you know, I just want to eat what I want to eat today. I want to get Stonefire today. And I'm like, okay, well, once again, it's just like, it's just a restaurant, right? It doesn't mean, you know, that Stonefire is inherently evil, because arguably it's actually not, you hit your protein goal really easy at Stonefire. But I'm just saying like, she has these beliefs tied to whatever it is, right? So if she's off script, she's being naughty. Right. And so if you hear the words you speak to yourself with about the things you eat, you'll know really in a day how you feel about food. But you have to pay attention, which is part of the problem, because people like to not pay attention when it comes to their food. Help me what to eat. I don't want to have to think about it.
100%. Well, you mean you don't know what you don't know. And so to your point, Jordan, I think bringing in somebody who can ask good questions, who brings some objectivity to it, which is, you know, is one of the things that I think tracking could potentially help with is realizing like all foods break down to calories and macronutrients. And so there's a way of equalizing that, but you know, you don't, until you can bring in some self-awareness and objectivity, you don't realize that your opinions or thoughts about food or bodies or the way it all works, you don't realize that those are just your beliefs. You think you're talking about reality. I mean, my daughter and I were with an acquaintance earlier this week, and she made in an hour and a half, she made several, you know, pretty startling comments, you know, one of which was, you know, commenting about another girl and how she's so tiny, using her pinky as like, you know, just this big, even though she cooks with cream and sugar and all these things. And again, correlating, like, how can those two things be true? Like, only you can only have a body that looks a certain way if you're eating a certain way, right? And that's sort of reflective of how so many people believe. But like you were saying, whether it's, you know, Stonefire or what ingredients you're cooking with, like the context overall is really what matters when it comes to diet or your beliefs about yourself.
I think we are absolutely going to give you, the listener, you guys listening, we're absolutely going to talk about tracking, I promise, and kind of how to talk about that process and how to make it less bad for mental health, more likely to have a positive experience. We will talk about that. But I think the first thing we are trying to get to you guys and hammer home is to work on some other things first. And I, you know, work on your relationship with food is one of the more vague sentences. And so I think I'd like to just say that that's the thing I would want everyone to take home from this first is like, I want people to do that first. If they can, there's a way to work on it during, you know, that's possible. But I think working on it first, or at least acknowledging that that's the step one, is acknowledging your relationship with food, acknowledging what your relationship with your, what your like body image relationship with your body / body image is, and that those are intimately tied. Your relationship between your body, your food, and your exercise are intimately tied, and starting to take a closer look at that and assessing if tracking is going to exacerbate negative things, help in a good way. And so I think step one just is working on it first, working on your relationship with food first, working on non-tracking things first would be far and away my more preferred in chronological order or sequence of events here. I promise we will talk about, you know, actual specific things when it comes to like a tracking process and maybe coaching process and stuff like that. But I definitely think that we're all in agreement here that this is something that it's like the title is how to count macros and not F up your relationship with food. And the best way to do that is to work on the relationship with food side first, so that you can look at tracking anything, however you track macros, calories, we'll talk a bit more neutrally and a bit more objectively, because, you know, you have that mindset already intact.
And let's just declare, like, when people say food is neutral, we don't mean that it has no meaning at all. We're meaning that like it can go either way depending on how you feel about it. So I think that's important to establish. People think that like food is fuel, it doesn't mean anything to me, or like, or you're supposed to like not enjoy it at all. It's like, that's not what food is neutral mean. I think we just need to, some people think, oh, I'm supposed to get to a place where, or they think there's a place that like,
I don't care about food anymore.
That's, I don't care about food at all.
No, sorry.
All it is that we see it as macronutrients, and it's just like protein, carbs, fat. We don't actually see it for any enjoyment, pleasure, or anything like that. And then if you are somebody who is like, well, actually I eat everything, so I feel like I have a good relationship with food, I don't have anything I dislike, let's also look at your relationship with exercise and food then, if that's another barrier. Like, for instance, I would be like, oh, 500 calories on the treadmill, I earned myself this, right? So that could also be part of your relationship with food. Even if you have like a really broad palate and you're not, air quote, denying yourself of anything, are you earning things, or do you feel like you haven't deserved something, could also be part of that too.
That's something that I think is a big one, that I think not counting calories burned is actually one of the best ways to make counting calories a better experience. I have my barber, he's on a health journey. He's the nicest guy ever. And he's, was just like, hey, talking about his Apple Watch. Like, oh, I try and burn this many calories per day on my Apple Watch. And like, there was a moment where I was like, I could have jumped in and be like, that's dumb, don't do that. But like, just to use that as an example, like even just going from counting calories burned to tracking steps, although you could tell me that one is a proxy for the other and they are the same thing, just calling it something different will stop you from subconsciously equating the movement that you do as for, you know, earning you calories that you eat, and then calories that you eat being burned off with the movement that you do. And you will just have a less likelihood that you're going to start to directly correlate those two, which I think is mega important for your relationship with exercise and nutrition, which are intimately tied. I see a lot of people like trying to burn X amount of calories. It's like, it's too similar to the calories you're tracking over here that you are trying to equate them too specifically. Of course, calories in and calories out, of course they are two sides of the equation, but we don't want to be so specific with, you know, I did this many calories on the treadmill, I get to have this many calories in my mouth, and vice versa. I feel like that's an important piece.
Yeah. And then also just make sure you're turning off your exercise calories and your MyFitnessPal while you are tracking, because sometimes it does add those calories back in, and then you're basically either overshooting, undershooting, or right at maintenance. So
totally. Well, and understanding too, that like, you the majority of your calorie burn comes from who you are, like how old you are, how tall you are. Like, you know, if you were in a coma, you would still burn the majority of your calorie burn would still happen. That your activity is I prefer to think of it as that is your, is that is how your body adapts to the type of exercise that you do. So if you're lifting weights, your body will adapt to that. Same thing with cardio or those kinds of things, but obsessing over calories burned through movement. Trying to, when we can't, and we'll be touching on this, I'm sure, throughout, but when you can't control your own emotions, it definitely makes you controlling of things outside of yourself, whether that be, you know, what you're seeing on your Apple Watch, MyFitnessPal, or other people or situations, but really realizing like, that's all very, very fear-based. And what is it that you are so terrified of or trying to control so much?
What we are going to, I totally agree. And we're going to talk about some of like the nuts and the bolts of like setting up your calories and like, you know, should you track calories and protein or macros? Like those are all things that I think are relevant. It's like, what level of flexibility are you doing this with? But I think I'm going to speak, I was going to say speak from the heart, this is a stupid comment. I'm going to speak just from like more of like a recency bias of like something I've been thinking very strongly recently. And I'm happy if you guys pick it apart actually, or not, or you agree, whatever, we'll see. But like, doubled and tripled.
I'm still on it from the heart.
Doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on having like, sometimes you have to give people what they want, give them what they need. You have to find that balance of like, we got to do 6 months at maintenance, no tracking, work on the relationship of food. And then we're going to start tracking. Like, it's like, sometimes that's not the best way to help people because they're coming to you with like a high level of motivation. You want to like start to get the ball rolling a little bit. So you try and find that happiest marriage. But one of the things I'm doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on with clients is either actively seeking out time to practice not tracking during a phase where that person is tracking. So either actively seeking that time out and like specifically being like, hey, we're going to take a week off tracking, or more like passively letting those times come to me. So if it's like, hey, a long weekend, if someone goes away for a long weekend, or they have a dinner out, or they have a, you know, a lot of people are like, a lot of people struggle with tracking when they didn't make the food, when they go on vacation, when they go out to dinner. And I'm going to say something hyperbolic, very, very absolute. And maybe I don't believe it 100%, but I'm close to it, that I actually think that those are just opportunities where I'm telling people, I don't want you to track then. Like, it depends. If you do that stuff so often, then we probably want to maybe be a little bit on that other end of the spectrum and being a little bit more precise. What I'm trying to get at is like, if I have a client even in a deficit, and they have a dinner out, a work dinner, or they have a long weekend, or they go on vacation, like, of the options that they have on the table, people are like, should I stick to my calories? Should I keep tracking? Like, I don't want you to track. I actually am actively seeking out this time for us to practice anything else, meal composition. Basically, can you survive without this? Can you build nutritious, satiating meals without this? Can you manage indulging on things that are fun when you feel they are worth it, plus also not rounding your nutrition all the way down to zero? So I'll come full circle here. I'll shut up. But like, one of the ways that like, I think you can count macros and not F up your relationship with food is more actively practice not tracking even while you're tracking. I know we just talked about prior to tracking, but while you are tracking, yes, even if you're in a deficit, you're going away for a long weekend, you're going to a wedding, I don't want you to track a thing. I want you to try something else, which of course we will talk about, coach to clients, like, hey, maybe we work on just having 2 drinks, not 10, you know, or getting a protein on every plate and just focus on that. And even if that's like not the best to like perfectly stick on your deficit, we have to practice other stuff so that you have other things in the other tools in the toolkit other than just counting your calories.
Okay. So I think that we're probably we're like similar camps, but neighboring camps, because you weren't really around in the beginning and the conception of Butter Your Macros, but that's all we did was go out to eat. So for us to like have the flexibility to be like, don't track any of those meals, that would mean that.
Well, you guys found the macros somewhere, right?
And so to address kind of like what your thoughts are behind the process. And I agree. I think there's a lot of power in allowing yourself to like enjoy your life and practice what you've learned, because the assumption is that this whole time that you're tracking, you're also teaching yourself stuff, right? Like that would be the assumption and the hope as coaches, that we would hope that you would be looking at and familiarizing yourself with like, what does 3 ounces of chicken look like? What does a serving size of chips look like? You know, do you know that there are 9 French fries in a small at Chick-fil-A? Like, you know, things like that, creating a little bit of awareness of like in context for what you're eating, right? But I think that, you know, before we can even do any of that is addressing the fear, right? A lot of people just feel like they cannot trust themselves when they go out to eat. They think drive-thrus are, you know, the devil, right? Anytime they have to like, you know, get fast food, it might as well just be like an end to their diet. Like, so addressing the fear around, you know, eating outside of your kitchen first would be what I think that we would suggest. And we created a whole page literally about restaurants. It's at Buddy or Macros Eats. We've done the nutritional information of basically anywhere you could possibly eat or something similar to. And so a lot of times what the tracking comes is like showing yourself and proving yourself that you can actually go out to eat and not like, you know, you can still lose weight. You can still hit your goals, and you're not going to like just like lose your shit. Excuse my language, like just from having like you drove through one day, right? Because
definitely.
And then you start blaming your lifestyle, like, oh well, if I only had prepared more, if I had meal prepped all week long, then I wouldn't have had to drive through McDonald's. But we were like at a soccer game, and it was 10 o'clock at night, and everyone was hungry, and I was hungry too. And I mean, then we start qualifying, and then we start creating a toxic relationship with how we feel about our goals because we feel like we can't do them, right? And so
that's fair.
Yes, reducing alcohol intake or, you know, having untracked meals at parties and events. But I will say that I've actually tracked at a wedding before because I was super curious just to see what it was. I did have someone who was like, nah, don't do that on the post that I did about it. But it was more of an out of a curiosity, right? Sure. Like, what are these events, you know, air quote, cost us, right? What is the reality of it? Can you stay on track if you want to, right? And that's what this all comes down to. What are your desires? What are your needs? What are your wants? And what are you addressing with tracking, with weight loss, with the pursuit of muscle definition, right? The relationship with yourself. But I think addressing that fear before you go into it, like, can you drive through without it being really noisy? And a way to do that is to see what it costs. Like when you realize that, I don't know, like a In-N-Out hamburger is really only like 260 calories. Does that seem really scary to you? Hopefully not. Right. And so then you can go out later with your friends and get a burger and they're like, this is probably not going to kill me. Right. So it's more of like addressing the fear before you go and then embracing the fear and trying it anyways. Right. And trusting that you've learned something in this process, because that's really what tracking is supposed to do. It's supposed to give you context and perspective for what, where you're sitting at, right? Just like budgeting, like where you're, what you're spending.
100%. I mean, all of that. And then also kind of full circle to your point, Jordan, like realizing that while that information is available, and I think just like I was saying with like your BMR being what burns the majority of your calories, like I think understanding, educating yourself on options and strategies like that, and then also realizing that you don't have to, that your results are not that fragile, and that not every single decision has to be a calorie cost benefit analysis, that you also like are a free agent that can go off script and that you'll be just fine also. So it's like the most annoying word ever, but it is a balance, right? It's like, you know, no different than us kind of, you know, realize it feeling like we're on the outside of fitness for most of our lives, then realizing, oh my gosh, maybe we can do this, and then grinding super hard, and then realizing, oh, we don't have to do it that hard, right? And that sort of full circle.
Yeah, that all makes sense to me. It depends on what the person's headspace is in. I just like, it's almost like if someone asks you like what the problem with tracking is, like, tracking doesn't work for me. It's like, okay, what's the problem? And they're like, well, I want to go away for like a weekend or something. Like it's really difficult for me. And I've just like found like taking that excuse away and be like, great, we're not going to track on those times. Anytime you go away for your one of these weekends, you're not tracking. And guess what? We'll practice other things. It's not like we're just like, hey, f- it, you know, we're not gonna do anything. We'll practice other things. And it's like, now I don't really have that. And I like that you guys countered with something, a slightly different perspective, because totally the illumination of realizing that, you know, I can go to In-N-Out and it's 260 calories for me to partake, and I don't need to be a hermit about it, is totally one outcome or hypothetical situation that I think brings a good outcome. So I'm with that too. That's actually a good point as well. And it also comes down to how often this happens. If I have a client who's like
100%.
Days a week, they're out. It's too. Like, we're doing something else entirely.
Totally. Well, and like you eat the majority of your meals at home. And so when you go out, you should have untracked meals, Jordan, because like 90% of your food is eaten at home. Right. And then, but then you have, you know, some of us who 90% of our food for the week sometimes is eaten not in our house. And so I think that depending on where you're at and what you're able to like see and track and where you are with your goals, it's nice to get the context of your life perspective, right? And I think that's really what it comes down to too. This is a very individual process to be able to find what works best for you in the context of your life, which is why we always say, you know, don't copy someone on Instagram, right? Like if I had to only eat like Jordan Lips, I'd probably be screwed. Like I don't have time to roast myself vegetables every day. It would be really nice to, but the reality is like I do drive through probably every week. I mean, it's just, you know, we got people to feed at home, and sometimes I don't come home at 7 o'clock and want to cook something for everybody. And so it could either be like, well, Natalie, you can never have any goals because your life isn't spent, you know, able to be cooking at home, or I can figure out how to make going through a drive-through work for my life, right? And then not have as much noise about it because I know what to order. I don't have to track it because I know what to get.
For the record, the only things that I cook, literally, I'd say 90% of the things that I cook are things that are from Costco that are already cooked that I heat up. So I was like thinking about like the vegetables, my meals are just like things that are 75% of the way cooked by the time they get into my cart in the store. It's like, hey, these vegetables are frozen, but they're already cooked. Heat them up. Or it's like the sous vide so chicken from Costco.
But it is self-care that you are allowed to, you have the time to prepare yourself. Yeah, like sure. Even I'm with 75%
cooked. No, totally. I agree with that. Totally.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Semi-homemade. I like it.
Oh, yeah. It's the greatest. Costco, if you just go to Costco and you're like, the stuff that's almost already all the way cooked, I just need to warm up. The things that fall into that category are endless. And people, there's a person who will not be named who was made a post about like, hey, shopping in Costco is making you fat. I don't know what I understand what this person was trying to say. Buying in bulk. If you have, let's say you have like a large bag of Doritos, that you're more likely to eat more Doritos than if you had a individual sized pack of Doritos. Like, I get that as a general construct, but it's actually a deterrent for me sometimes. Like, if I looked at like the overall like nutrition quality of my cart when I leave Costco versus if I go to HEB or something, Costco is more nutritious food, I'd say generally, because it's a deterrent that I have to buy so much. I'm like, hey, I want this bag of kettle cut chips or whatever, kettle corn chips or whatever. What is it?
Popcorners.
Yeah, not even that. It's like a like kettle cooked. Like kettle cooked.
Oh, okay.
Crazy? Like Cape Cod, like a Cape Cod chip.
Yeah.
The Cape Cod chip is like literally the size of my entire torso. And I'm like, nah, I don't really need that much. And then I don't buy it at all. And so for me, I'm looking down and I'm like, I'm only gonna buy this stuff. Like, if it sold individual packages of stuff, I'd buy more. So I find that to be an interesting thing. Anyway, total tangent.
Well, and party size does exist at Walmart and regular grocery stores. So
true.
Costco, true.
Costco's wild.
You can get in trouble at a grocery store too, whoever the Costco hater is.
Costco's crazy, man.
It is great. It is the end of the yellow brick road. I do agree with you though, that it is like, but it's statements like that, that I think just stoke the fear fire here. Like, oh my gosh, I don't have the body I want and I shop at Costco. So now what? Right. And it's like, it is, whether it's people saying like, do you know how many pushups you have to do to like work off those kettle chips or whatever?
Well, I didn't even know that if you have pit stains, like,
or if you go to the, if your arms don't look good at the party, you can go to the bathroom and do pushups and get a pump. So.
Oh my gosh.
I'm still stuck on the pit stains on your shirts. Like, I didn't even know that that was like, oh my gosh, your lips, you have pit stains?
Yeah. Yeah. Fat.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Game over.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of like the actual like nuts and bolts of like how you might track. I think if we're just going to quick recap, I think acknowledging that doing some work on the front end that doesn't have to do with tracking, whether it's relationship with food, body image, exercise, doing that first on the front end, which is like some level of awareness and some level of action about changing that, would be number one. I think number two would be considering working on it during. So kind of having a parallel approach of like either going to therapy while you're doing this so you can talk about this stuff, or making sure you have a coach with whom you talk about this with. Like, you know, people have coaches that like don't actually ever I was gonna say see them. Some coaches do a great job through email, but like, You gotta be like, if you have a coach that you never, ever get a chance to have like in-depth conversations. So even if it's an email, like, you can still do in-depth conversations in email. Like, if you go the extra mile as a coach and a client, like, you can do that. So let's just say if you don't have these sorts of conversations with your coach at all, like, I find it to be really like a tough sell for like people who are like, hey, I also need to get better with my relationship with food. Like, you're probably not doing that if we like email a little blurb once a week. Like, it's probably not the best thing to do. So I think that would be number two. Number three, what might be some consideration of either practicing not tracking. It's funny because it's some combination of practicing not tracking so that you can work on other principles too, and practicing tracking when it's hard, as to illuminate the fact that you could probably also survive calorically maybe better than you think, as an extension of what tracking does, which is teach you what's, you know, how much calories and macros are in foods. This is one of those times where it can teach you that, okay, you can survive in these external circumstances. And then the third bracket of things I think we'll go into now is like specific things about how you track that might, you know, more likely be not so bad for your relationship with food, let's say. So you guys, we can go back and forth on, you guys can throw one out to start.
I think there are definitely a couple different camps. We're of the do not pre-log variety. It gives us anxiety to think about like what we're doing the next day. And also like, what if you have a perfectly fit puzzle and all of a sudden like one piece comes out and you don't even know what to do with it and the whole thing can fall
out.
That's
cool. And come down. I like that.
So, but there are people who believe and preach and advise and recommend pre-logging. And while I can definitely see the benefits of it, my personality type doesn't allow me to. So if I was forced to be a pre-logger, I would not have had success with macros.
Tell me more about that experience, like how that can be a down, what the downside of that can be.
Pre-logging?
Yeah. I think it's up on, it's like a holy grail. Yeah. I'm curious what the downside of that is.
I mean,
I
somebody with some ADHD, I don't even really know what I'm going to be doing in 3 hours. Okay. Because to sit and think like, oh, I have an appointment at 7 o'clock at night, my whole day is spent thinking about that. So if the same way with food, if I feel like I only have these certain things that I'm allowed to have throughout the whole entire day, it allows me no flexibility for anything that happens or changes in my day. First of all, what if I open the fridge and what I thought I was going to eat and what I had pre-logged that fit exactly into my numbers was gone all of a sudden? Or what if it went bad? Because that's also something that has happened, right? RIP bag salads. Anyways. Or like, what if I just don't want that anymore? Or what if my husband calls me and is like, hey, can we get pizza tonight? Or if Heidi and Ben are like driving through somewhere and like, do you want Chick-fil-A too? And I'm like, yeah, I want Chick-fil-A. I don't want to have to cook what I had planned. Or, I mean, there's a whole, there's probably more reasons I can give you about why pre-logging for me would not work than just winging it. And so, yeah, were there some nights that I had to have like six, you know, cups of egg whites and like handful of blueberries and like, you know, half a glass of Fairlife milk to make my protein goal because I had done too much carbs and fat in the front of the day. Sure. But then now we know that you can do protein and calories. And like, that is such a game changer for hitting all three, right? But when we were tracking, we were hitting all three. And you know, what's really cool about it? You really learn how to eat balanced really, really quickly. You know how to like recognize like how your body feels like, oh crap, I'm probably short on carbs right now, or I could really use some protein. And by being on the fly, it allowed me to make choices for myself throughout the day to fill my needs, especially if I hadn't eaten for a long time or I had some flexibility in like the way my windows worked. You know, as a hairdresser, sometimes I don't get to eat for 5 or 6 hours. Sometimes I do. And so what was nice about that is it allowed me to like match what I was doing. And yeah, it takes a little bit more thought. It takes a little bit more effort, but you know, having, you know, my own variation of like pre-logging your meal prep, which is by having protein sources on hand, having similar breakfast, having similar lunch, like those same kind of ideas that you would maybe pre-log with, but more in like a flexible form, was really actually really freeing for me. Cause then I could make my own decisions about what I wanted to eat instead of feeling like I was confined to this that I had planned the day before. Because you know what? Sometimes Monday Natalie doesn't know what Thursday Natalie wants. And I just don't want to make that assumption for myself. But also, well, what did happen? Like, let's just say at the end of the day, like you did have, you know, 700 calories left. I could go fill that 700 calories with something that I wanted. And then it felt less of like a diet and more of like I was able to make choices, but within these kind of confines and this construct. And so that was what was helpful for me. I know it's not something that works for a lot of people, but it also comes down to how curious you are about your process and like how much you trust yourself with things too, you know, and your process, which you can listen to our Is Tracking Triggering episode and you will know why I can't. It's because of the day planner mentality. So I don't want to prejudge myself or pre-plan for myself when I don't really know what I'm.
What about you, Heidi? Are you similar in that way, personality wise?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of overlap. For me, I think making a lot of decisions is really overwhelming. And ironically, the more trivial the decision, the more overwhelming it is to me. Like, give me a huge life crisis decision, I can get some clarity pretty quick. But like the making a multitude of mini decisions is just really overwhelming. And like Nat said, it coincides with so many other decisions, like where will I be? Who will I be with? Will they want it too? Is this, you know, all of that kind of a thing. So definitely the pre-logging lifestyle is just a little bit too rigid for me, but for me, it actually feels like less effort to just have a few different protein sources in the fridge, make most of the family meals we make typically higher in protein, have, you know, some Costco protein shakes on hand. It's been way easier for that than, you know, the first go. I think we tried to use like Clean Simple Eats, like way, way, but way back in the day. And it's like following other people's recipes or following other people's like style of eating is just not, it's just not for me.
And we're also kind of just naturally people pleasers. So if everyone in our, like, we don't control all the food landscape for everyone in our house. We've got picky eaters. We've got husbands that like,
don't want to eat, too.
Yeah. Don't want to eat the way we want to eat. So it would be really hard for us to eat the same thing every single day. Like it just wouldn't work with our lifestyle. So we just didn't do it that way.
Yeah. Having said that, like, you know, there are parallel skills, like planning to have protein sources in the fridge, or thinking through the rest of your day or through events and like having a couple options on hand. That's just way better for me mentally and emotionally. And I think it takes a lot of the stress out of it. And honestly, I would say it's at least 50-50 among our clients, whether they're pre-loggers or wingers. How would you call it?
I think just because you're not pre-tracking doesn't mean you're not setting yourself up for success. I mean, setting yourself up for success is an umbrella of which there's a lot of different options. Like what you're talking about is like, hey, like I know that I need to have fruits, vegetables, proteins easily, readily accessible, on hand, close to me, like geographically, like distance wise, literally close to me, like easy to cook, feeds the mouths in my house, that'll suffice. And so you're saying, you know, for me, like actually like putting my whole day in the app, not for me, but going ahead and making the act of forming meals easier by stocking my house and the cabinets and the fridge and the this and that with stuff that I know will make that process easier in the future makes a ton of sense to me. Whether you're doing both of those or not, I think that's like a massive one. It's like, it starts with the food shop. It starts with like, let's be like, you think you're in control. You are in control to some degree, but like you want to increase your percent chance of eating more nutritiously more often. It's like stock more nutritious food more often. There's nothing disordered. Like it's just like, there's nothing disordered about buying less crap. So you eat less crap. Like there's just like, I don't mean to be so like good or bad. I just say, all right, buying less not nutritious foods, you eat less not nutritious food. Like there's nothing disordered about that.
I completely agree. Like I know through tracking and counting macros, I learned a lot about how I feel as a result of food eating, both timing and choices and all of that. Like, right.
Hey, you never learned about your low blood sugar until you start tracking macros.
100%. So, I mean, even just right now, and I'm not like dialed in a cut or even really tracking these days. And I've got panko crusted chicken breasts, Fairlife protein milk or chocolate milk, Greek yogurt, string cheese, healthy choice meals in the freezers. I mean, there's plenty of choices that have a good protein base. And you know, that's a habit I'll take with me regardless of,
pre-logging doesn't mean you're not pre-thinking. That's not what that means. It's not like either or. You can actually wing it like strategically too. Right.
I think if we look at I'm going to rattle off. I know you guys have a couple minutes. We got to close up shop in a sec, but if we're looking at like things about the nuts and bolts of how you're tracking, I think the ones that jump to mind are me considering the use of pre-tracking in some way. So either you're pre-tracking or you're preparing. Huh, that's funny there. Or you're considering the use of calorie cycling. So whether or not that like mentally, personality, logistically with like the way you live your life and lifestyle and going out and stuff, is that a strategy that will work for you? Does it line up with your hunger cues or not? Or is it kind of like an excuse to mask like some binge restrict tendencies? Consider the use of tracking just calories and protein versus all the macros. Again, I'm saying consider because there are people that it works both for, but I think that's something that you should think about when you're like, hey, how do I make this strategy, you know, not interfere with my ability to have a good relationship with food? I think using a range for a lot of things, whether that's like a range of expected weight loss or a range of calories or a range of macros or a range of steps, like looking, just taking everything and just zooming out and looking at averages, ranges, being a little bit less precise. And then the last one that I put was don't go too low in calories. I'm like intellectually a believer that that's not like physiologically a thing, but practically it's sure a thing. And if you want to make your relationship with food make your relationship with food less bad, don't try and eat 1,000 calories. Like there is a direct correlation across populations of people who go on super crazy crash diets and people who worsen their relationship with food. Those two lines are like right on top of each other. And so yes, is it technically possible for you to go on a really low calorie diet and do it in a good headspace and not ruin your relationship with food? Totally. Is it likely? Probably not.
Well, and let's remember that what we do consistently is what gets us results. It's way less sexy than aggressively, but if you cannot maintain this pace that you selected for yourself, then you should probably think and consider about increasing your calories. Even 100 makes a huge difference, especially if you are in a deficit, right? And also, like, let's not throw out the, you know, baby with the bathwater on maintenance. Like, there's a great place to start is in maintenance. Like, that would ideally be where most coaches should recommend that you start, against your, you know, of course, in right. your own will, and you don't want to, but at the same time, that gives you a whole heck of a lot of context for your relationship with food when you actually know how much you're supposed to have, right? Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, most of us are not supposed to walk around with eating as little as possible. That's not really a thing.
I was all talk. If you guys need to go, just like give me, do the hand signal that we talked about. And I was all talk when I was starting my last cut. I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it a little bit more aggressive. I'll get in, get out, you know, all like the fun things that you say, I'll get in, get out. I'll just grit and bear it for X amount of weeks and I'll get it done and quick. And then we'll get on with it. I'll do a fast reverse diet. And like all like the things that are like trendy now to say, which we've all, like I've said too. I was like, maybe half of one day into like my like aggressive short get in, get out strategy. And I was like, nah, I just can't do this. And so I just remembered that I look at Jen. I was like, oh, I'm going to get in, get out. Let's do this quick. You know, all the things that people are like, ah, that's my fits my personality type. I'm like, sure it does. I'm sure it does. You know, and then one day into your 1700 calorie below maintenance diet and you're like starving and hate it and can't sustain it. Like that was me too. So as much as like, it is fun to say that get in, get out, like just do, you know, be a little bit more aggressive. Like physiologically, it's not a big deal. You're not going to lose a lot of muscle. Like that, all that stuff is true. Like actually trying it once and deciding, can I even do this, is an important part.
Well, remember when you talked me through that as well? Like, I mean, you coached me through a surplus and it was time to cut. And I tried it and I was like, and scene. Like, it was like, it's when you, I think spending time in maintenance, having an appreciation for how you feel when you have a balanced, adequate intake, you start to realize that a cut really does, it really does cut. Like it really does provoke a lot of physiological symptoms that are not pleasant. And a lot of people live there more often than they don't. And I think just again, bringing, like you were talking about, like being flexible with your ranges, with your expectations of yourself, and being curious about how you feel, what you're observing in yourself, both emotionally and behaviorally. I mean, we learn more from our mistakes and our negative beliefs about food and ourselves when we, quote, screw up, close quote, than we do when, you know, when things go perfectly.
I tend to think that like there's a, that I wish that education was the thing that like helped people fight emotion with logic. Like I like to think that that's the case where it's like, hey, let's fight emotion with logic. Not that emotion's bad, but if one of the things that's been helpful for me to like become more aware of how I think and speak is like when my thoughts and my feelings like don't actually have like don't make logical sense in the real world. And there's like a bit of a dissonance there where I'm like, well, that's not objectively true. So why am I, what's causing me to feel that way? And so like when people talk about like this food is good, this food is bad, this is, you know, carbs make me fat, and they have just some things that are like objectively untrue. And so I do think that there is, education is helpful. I mean, it's just like, listen, man, people know cigarettes are bad for you. People still buy their first pack of cigarettes. So it's not like education is like, you're going to fix everyone's problem. People know that right. Having too much body fat is not great for health. It's just not stopping the rate of, you know, obesity going up. But I still think it's an important piece of this. I think it's important to understand generally energy balance, understand generally that fiber is important. Why? That protein is important. Why? That carbs don't make you fat. Why? That, you know, why is a Pop-Tart maybe less helpful for your weight maintenance goals physiologically, but where does it have a place in the non-biological drives to eat, the reasons that we enjoy food for other reasons? So there's education that I think it would be remiss to not mention. I think it's relevant. It's something that we as coaches like to do, but I think it's important to acknowledge that you can't just tell someone the truth and have it entirely be like, okay, oh, carbs don't make me fat. So all of a sudden I'm totally cured of my carb phobia. Like it doesn't actually work that simply.
So true. Exactly. And similarly, like if somebody's in a overeating shame spiral, that it isn't a moral failing. And that when you are at the effect of significant negative emotion, that your logic, the logic centers in your brain literally are offline, and you may not have access to that education that you're talking about. But again, that's also a situation you can learn so much about yourself from, about what you were thinking and feeling at that time, what were the triggers in your environment, what was happening for you leading up to that, to those experiences, rather than looking at that and being like, well, that was a super huge mistake and I'm a terrible person who will never get my goals and now I'm going to double down on perfectionism and try to hit everything exactly from now on, because that's where safety is. It's like, it's definitely not. It's in, you know, like you said, having approaching yourself and your goals with some flexibility and awareness and objectivity.
Have you guys, I don't know, do you have time for one more thing?
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you had I know you do, but like, I'm curious, have you had clients, whether they're not enjoying the tracking experience or whether it is maybe messing with their relationship with food, like, have there been like, what are not some of your go-to other strategies, but maybe things that alongside tracking, maybe instead of, but maybe alongside, that you feel like, other than just like traditional calorie counting, and I'll start with one to give an example, but like, other than just like traditional counting the macros, counting the calories, like stuff that you think is important to acknowledge alongside of it. And one of them for me has been like either a total fiber goal or a per meal fiber goal, even just as like a way of breaking down that larger goal into smaller goals. To me, that has had, it's just funny because it's so important on so many levels, because it's important directly because it's good for your health, you having good gut microbiome, it's good for your cholesterol. But it is also really good for satiety, and it also just like very indirectly helps you limit calories. And not that that's like sneakily what we're going for, but it also is a nice knock-on benefit. And so that has actually been something that's like, yeah, we're going to track calories. That's important. But like, I'd sooner have you track fiber than carbs, you know, and that's my personal thing. I'd rather you track fiber than fat. I'd rather you track fiber than
totally.
Almost protein, maybe, you know, as you know. And so that's something that, depending on how like specific you want to be with that, are there other things that you have experienced where you're like, yeah, maybe we're counting the macros, but we're also paying attention to this thing here that I think is really important.
You know, I totally agree with you on fiber. And I would rather have people count protein than even calories, if that was even, that was even an option. As far as, you know, we've done things like, you know, what are foods you think you aren't allowed to have? Like, what are foods you believe are bad? What are foods you wish you could have, you know, and starting to work some of those in. You know, we had a client once who had a real thing with chocolate cake. And so she fit chocolate cake in like every day for like 2 weeks. And then she was like, and suddenly the power of chocolate cake is gone. You know, not that she doesn't enjoy it, but you know, the like Nat's bad boy analogy, that sort of thrill of it dissipated. And then of course, just like, you know, a lot of the other biofeedback markers, like, are you getting enough sleep? That's probably one of the biggest ones we've been coaching and focusing on this past year, because it talks about something that completely colors. Yeah. Completely colors your reality. Yeah.
Just tracking the hours spent in bed, I think, is very objective, because it's hard to be like, I slept this many hours. Cause like, you probably sleep like 80% of the time that you are in bed. I'm really going to think about putting that in my little tracker thing, at least as like an optional thing that people can track, because I think that that could be pretty illuminating. I think it's pretty, you know, to know, like, yes, sleep quality is something I'd like to know, but like, I think a proxy for sleep quality would just be like time I invest to being in my bed, which I think I would put at around like at least 8 hours, frankly. Now, you won't sleep for that long, but being like, the term is a sleep opportunity. It's like how much time you have to sleep. And at least 8 hours of that. Amazing. That's an amazing call. That's totally one on my list. Absolutely. I've tried like satiety scoring and like trying to, you know, journal after meals. And it has been helpful for those who do it, but it's certainly one of those things like meditation, where a lot of people like find that they just like either don't have, they'll scoff at a little bit, or I don't have the time to do that, or I'm not going to sit down and journal after I eat. But that can be like a little questionnaire, like a 3 or 4 like satiety scoring, like how you feel energy wise, you know, half hour after you eat or something like that, has been an interesting one for those that have stuck with it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I mean, then that might be something, you know, meditation for me is definitely not a daily practice, but I try to get it in a few times a week. You know what I mean? And journal, maybe doing a journaling exercise like that. Like absolutely. I mean, anything like you were talking about in the very beginning, like, how do you build your introspection? that way, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, you're asking yourself in whatever way works for you. Sometimes we'll have people set a timer on their phone for just a few random times a day. And when it comes up, it's like, what am I feeling right now? What am I thinking about right now? Just building your self-awareness, basically being curious and watchful about your life experience, and how it's working for you.
Yeah, the word is curious, and that's just like something that takes time to cultivate. A lot of people don't want to ask those questions because they're not afraid of the answer, but like there are things that like your gut might know. Sometimes you explore something new. I think that that's totally normal, but sometimes you kind of know and you don't want to admit that it's something you're not proud of, and so you're like subconsciously like blocking it out. But
totally.
Have you ever had a period of time committed to like journaling like in a longer form?
You know, yeah, I've definitely gone through periods of that. Journaling, I'm much more of a verbal processor, to be honest. So I'm like a method that kind of, I mean, obviously I have Nat to talk to a bunch, but I also make time in my week to talk to my sisters, and I have a therapist, and I have a coach, and, you know, a life coach. And I think that really like, that helps, that brings like a sense of accountability and consistency to that like self-awareness practice.
Awesome.
Works for me. What about you?
I have, and there've been periods where it goes really well. It's something that I find difficult to pick up after putting down, something that definitely it's like a momentum thing for me. I think just you need to have some blocked out time, whether it's per week, per day, that you are being introspective. Like I just, and for me, it's the 1 hour of therapy every week, where I'm like, and there are times I find that interesting with therapies, like the one, not that we're pivoting hard, you guys, I'm sorry, we're not going to circle back around to calories just yet. We're probably going to shut it down after this, so you don't give a shit about any of this, go ahead. But it's like, that time to me is like, I need it there, because it's not that it lets me off the hook of being introspective on the daily, it's still like, you can't, those skills are with me all the time, but if I didn't have that, it would really make, I don't know, there are weeks that I just like, want to not have it because I want to like a little self-sabotage. Like I want to sulk. I don't want to face the feelings I know I'm having. And I texted my therapist. I'm like, if I ever try to cancel on you, like call bullshit at least one time, like call bullshit on whatever my excuse is at least once. Be like, are you sure that's what you have? Like, just give me one chance to like backtrack on it. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm just like, yeah, just if I tell you I got a call or something, be like, are you sure you have a call? Like, just do it once. Just give me one chance to like opt back in.
It's so true. Well, and I mean, I think I will bring it full circle back to tracking, actually, because I think a lot of times people avoid it because they don't, because of what they don't want to see, or because they haven't done it for so long or whatever. But, you know, popping in every now and then, actually, you know, if you're taking a break or whatever, I think that's great. But popping in every now and then, just like you were talking about with like tracking an In-N-Out burger and tracking what you are doing, just, you know, first of all, it is a perishable skill. So it might be interesting for you to see, you know, see how you're doing. And I bet it's going to be better than you think it is.
Yeah. Agreed. We're going to wrap it up there. I got a call in a second. Thank you guys for coming. Thank Heidi for sticking around a little bit longer. Everyone DM Natalie and tell her be mad that she had to walk out a couple minutes early. But all good. Thanks for your time, guys. And yes, we'll catch you guys in the next episode. Good.
All right. See you later.
Whew, you made it. The butter dish didn't melt your face.
Thanks so much for hanging with us. If you enjoy that episode, we'd love it if you would subscribe, share it to your social media, or leave a comment. That all really helps, so the kids say. If you want to find us, you can find us at Instagram at ButterYourMacros.
On the web at ButterYourMacros.com.
Twitter and TikTok at What's Up Butters. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks.